For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting night of NBA basketball.
With the first pick, the Detroit Pistons select Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State University.
To Chandler again. Oh, what a block by Max Seal! My goodness!
The Pistons are digging in. They got the depth. They got the big men. They got the better basketball team. No doubt about it.
There's Jaden playing the passing lane. Sky's a jam. The crowd loves it.
Pistons need a three, and they have just under 3 seconds to do it. Here's Chauncey Phillips. Here it is. He's got it. He's got it. Chauncey Phillips hits the three. Overtime. Amazing.
On a bounce, Detroit basketball.
Pistons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, part of the Believe Network. I'm your host, Mike Angolano. Joining me this week are my familiar faces that I've seen so little lately, I feel, and my two co-hosts, of course, Jasper Apollonia and Aaron Johnson. Guys, I don't know the last time we did a full pod with everybody. It could have been like 2 weeks ago. My brain is completely mush at this point.
Oh no, long COVID Mike.
Oh no, I know. It got me.
Wait, were you not on last week's?
I wasn't.
No, I was, but okay. Jasper wasn't.
Okay, I'm like, I feel like I did just talk to you last week.
I'm glad we're all up to speed on absolutely nothing. This is we're off to a great start. Here's the great thing. We're going to remember the most obscure details about some of the teams we're talking about today, and we can't remember who we talked to last week. I think if that doesn't like sum up what being a sports fan is all about, I really don't know what else does.
Just total sickos.
Absolutely. If I'm looking to wedge a Mitch McGarry or Steve Blake joke into a podcast, we're so deep into sicko territory, there is no coming back.
Oh man, I love it. We have sporical brain, fellas. Sporical brain. It's all of that's exactly what it is. It just rotted from the inside. YA Tittle, I know him. My mom's birthday, a little hazy on the details.
Not quite sure. You have to think what holiday is that around? Oh yeah, and then subtract 12. Yes, got right. It. Okay.
But you know what? That's why we keep this podcast free, because we know that we know nothing. And that's why we're not on Patreon. We know
our value.
Yeah, we know our value. It's nothing. That's what
we're not. We're not worth the money. Let's just put it that way. We won't be gaining anything from listening to us.
The difference is we at least recognize that.
Story times.
Oh god, yeah. I should be paying people for those, to be honest.
Yeah, probably, man. In which case we make nothing, as opposed to the Chipotle burrito type of money that we're making right now. But we don't do it for the money. We do it because it's fun. And isn't that what it's all about? It's about the friends you make at the end. We were talking about fantasy football, and there's nothing to, there's like hardly anything friendly about that, because I think every trade that gets thrown into our group chat is just hate and vitriol. And Jasper's not in the league this year, but the Saquon Barkley trade that Czar and Tim had going on was, look, I got clowned majorly for swindling my friend last year out of Joe Mixon for Clyde Edwards-Helaire and something else. And that Saquon Barkley trade was, could have been so much worse than anything. I would have been vindicated entirely. But now I'm getting clowned today because I offered Zay Flowers for Calvin Ridley and it was accepted.
Boo. Oh, get out of here. You know what? Let's go to the ad read, because I need something to make me like feel at least something right now. Cause that just makes me feel rage.
I'm the most fraudulent 3-1.
Yeah, as opposed to betting, which always makes me happy. So
God, yeah. I tried that with playoff baseball and proceeded to be like the most boring wild card round ever. But you can just not do what I do and be good at betting. And when you do that, you should use Bet Online. And football is back. Bet Online is your number one information source for all your sports wagering info, with all the up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football at your fingertips with BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoff and the Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. Head on over to the website today or use your mobile device. Get in on the action. And remember to use our promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use BetOnline. Again, that is BLEAV, BLEAV, to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Mike, is that your official gambling advice? Be good at it?
Yeah, well, it's really just don't do what I do. Whatever I do, do the opposite. It's like George Costanza. You just
fade Mike.
Everything
fade Mike.
Yeah, oh yeah, fade yeah, Mike. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Mike, does Bet Online have betting odds for who the Pistons' backup center this year will be?
Those are probably taken off the board at this point. Because it's a toss-up. And that is, of course, Jasper being the masterful softball lobber for me, and the segues right into our first topic, and that is James Wiseman versus Marvin Bagley. As new head coach Monty Williams indicated Wednesday that Marvin Bagley and James Wiseman are competing for the backup big spot. I don't know how I feel about this, but kind of indicates that Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren are going to be the starting front court, which I have more questions about, just as many, if not more questions about that starting pair than I do the backup bigs. But let's just start with who's going to be duking it out for backup. Marvin Bagley and James Wiseman, two players that, you know, one is super polarizing. One, we kind of know exactly what he is at this point. Higher ceiling, lower floor, higher floor, lower ceiling, et cetera, however you want to put it. So let's start with, I guess, the backup bigs. Who do you think comes out of this position battle? Because I feel like whoever comes out with the backup big, the primary backup big role, is probably not going to be long for that role.
Look, I think both of these guys are not very good, to put it nicely. I'm not comfortable with either of them being the backup center, but I am a little relieved to hear that the plan is for one of them to be in the rotation and not both of them to be in the rotation. Although I'm not sure what the rest of Detroit's second unit looks like, I don't know necessarily who would be the team's backup four after the Isaiah Livers news, with him out the next 2 months or so. But I am still relieved to hear that only one of these guys is going to be on the court and not both of them at the same time, or both of them throughout the game, because first off, neither of these guys are all that beneficial to Detroit. Secondly, they're very similar in the way that they play, so they'd be redundant playing next to one another, and it's just not necessary. Detroit needs to find other guys to fill those minutes, because it's just going to lead to better basketball for the team. If I were selecting or making the decision, I think I would lean Marvin Bagley, just because it feels like he's a little bit more adept at making more team plays, specifically on the offensive side of the court. Both of them are albatrosses on defense, but, you know, we didn't see it last year because obviously Cade got hurt and Marvin Bagley started the season hurt. But when Bagley came to Detroit initially, him and Cade had some nice chemistry, running pick and rolls, being a rim runner, being a lob threat, finishing around the rim. And I'd like to see if Bagley, A, can stay healthy, which is always a major question with him, but B, if he can try to replicate some of that offensive success that he had, not last year, but the year before. And I just feel like he's probably the safer option of the two. I guess Wiseman would have the quote-unquote greater upside, but I just find both these players so similar, so redundant, with the same glaring weaknesses. It's hard for me to really feel strongly either way. I just think Bagley is a little bit more conducive, and from what we've seen so far, a little more willing to try to fit into the offense, whereas what we've seen from Wiseman is he wants paint touches, he wants post touches. You know, he's not setting great screens in the pick and roll. He's not some great lob threat. So, and not that Bagley's great at any of those things or doesn't have his own plays where, you know, he'll call for the ball down low and junk up a possession trying to do his own thing. But I think he's just a little bit better, and I guess that's who I would prefer. I would imagine, considering the Pistons traded Sadiq Bey to get Wiseman, with already having Bagley on the roster and how much they've talked up James Wiseman, that James Wiseman will be the one to get the minutes. But I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. Preseason starts on Sunday, so maybe we'll get a little bit of an indication on where Detroit's leaning to start off preseason and heading into the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, there's really two questions here. First is who should win the backup spot, and the second is who will. And I think that those answers are very different. Who should? It's pretty clear to me. Watching the games last year, Marvin Bagley outplayed James Wiseman, period. End of story. He absolutely did. And while they're both young players, relatively so, more so with Bagley, you know, in today's league, if you're 25 years old, you're a veteran. And that's just kind of how it is. But when they played on the court, either together or off it, Bagley outperformed Wiseman last year. That being said, it's exactly like you just laid out, Aaron. Neither guy is really much good. And I think that that is, if anything, probably the strongest thing Wiseman has going for him, is that Bagley is really a known quantity at this point in his career. And that quantity is not very high quality. That's really the biggest problem Marvin Bagley has going for him, where even if he does currently represent an upgrade over James Wiseman, and to be clear, we haven't seen the preseason games. Perhaps Wiseman took a step forward in terms of his development this offseason. We certainly hope that is the case. But if you're just going off of what their careers have been so far, Bagley's been the better option. He's just not the very good option. And for exactly the reasons you laid out, Aaron, they did trade Sadiq Bey for James Wiseman. They are going to be paying him not much less than they're paying Marvin Bagley this year. There is a real incentive for them to see exactly what they have in Wiseman this year and to at least give him a legit shot, because truly, where is the future for Marvin Bagley on this roster? Even if he does win the backup position, does anybody, forget just with the three of us, does really any of our listeners, does anybody on Twitter, does anybody who just watches games casually think that Marvin Bagley is going to improve so much that he's going to be even an average backup big? I don't think the answer is going to be yes from really anybody at this point in his career, especially since he can't stay healthy. So the way I look at it is that whereas Marvin Bagley might have the edge in terms of being a player right now, in the end, you have to see what you have in James Wiseman. And he's not so much worse than Marvin Bagley to where you can't justify playing him over Bagley, at least to begin this season. You just have to see what you have there. So for me, I think it's actually a pretty easy answer. It's going to be James Wiseman because it has to be James Wiseman because you have to justify the investment you've made here. And you have to see what you have there. That's the whole reason you traded for him instead of getting a bunch of second round picks. You wanted to see what you have there, and you didn't get that opportunity last year fully because you didn't have Cade Cunningham on the floor while James Wiseman was on your team. You've seen Marvin Bagley and Cade Cunningham together. You know what it is. It's not good. I don't really anticipate it being much better with Wiseman, but you have to give that a shot. So for me, I think it's a simple answer. Even if Bagley's better, it's going to be James Wiseman. And to answer the second little part of our question, does that indicate the starting lineup is set with Stewart and Durin? Yes, absolutely. I think that that was a lock the second that they signed Isaiah Stewart to that extension. He was going to be the starter coming into this year. He will be the starter. I cannot see a reality where they are bringing him off the bench the year before his extension even kicks in. Because if you're doing that, you're literally regressing his role and you're saying, well, we don't trust him to be the starting power forward. That brings up even more questions of why did you sign him the extension? So this is one of those things with Troy Weaver that we've talked about many times where he puts himself in these situations where he has to follow through on them because he's made an investment. And if you don't follow through on it, then why'd you make the investment in the first place? So that's my answer.
So when I first thought about this question, it kind of connects with all of the talk about Asar Thompson being in the starting lineup because he might be your best defender already. And it also kind of leaks into where do you put Bojan Bogdanović, your best shooter, assuming that Joe Harris is not what he was several years ago. Because we've talked about all last year that Bogdanović is probably better suited to play the four at this stage, definitely defend at the four, given his size and mobility. What I'm kind of leaning towards is, does it really matter who the backup big is? Is that player even going to be on the roster at the end of the season? Because to me, from a team building perspective, unless Isaiah Stewart is shooting the Dickens out of the ball from deep, you're still going to have a spacing problem.
I'm sorry, Mike. I thought you were going to say another word there. I got thrown for a loop. Sorry.
No. I'm sorry to make you sweat. Unless he is shooting the absolute lights out of the basketball from deep, spacing is going to be a big problem. This is assuming Asar Thompson is going to play. Start, rather. Because you're going to have Cade and Ivy as your backcourt. If you have your best defender in Asar Thompson be the three, I think it makes sense to put Bogdanović at the four and have Durin at the five as your rim protector. And Isaiah Stewart is sort of your comes off the bench, high energy, can hit some threes, you know, maybe plays maybe slightly above his position defensively because he's just kind of an annoying defender and he's going to come at you in a way that Tristan Thompson used to, where he just kind of played above a little bit. I just see that working better. I think you need to have Bogdanović in the starting lineup to make spacing work. And we're super ahead of the curve because there's no guarantee that Asar Thompson starts, but I feel like the backup big makes more sense to have Isaiah Stewart have that role. Maybe not necessarily his backup center, but he can play small ball five. We've seen that before. I just don't want to think about Wiseman versus Bagley because it's such a Spider-Man meme situation where they're both inefficient at the same things, and they're both inefficient at the same things on the other side of the ball as well. But to me, if you want your best defender out there in Thompson, you need to have Bogdanovich, which creates a logjam, and you can't put Isaiah Stewart starting at the five. That's malpractice. So I think there's a lot to sort out with the starting lineup, a lot. But if Asar Thompson is what he was in summer league and brings that defense, it's going to be hard to not play him. And then that kind of shifts everybody down the lineup after that.
But the problem is, like, exactly like I said, though, you've invested in Isaiah Stewart. You've already paid him for, you've extended him for 4 years after this season. So I don't see how you can justify spending that money and then say, hey, we're bringing him off the bench as our backup center now. Like, that doesn't make any sort of sense.
I don't,
for a GM.
I don't think that's how it's going to be to start the year. I think at some point when you want to move on from one of these guys, if you're able to move off of Bagley's contract, if Wiseman's, you know, playing well enough that they, you know, for some reason want to move on from him, I think by the end of the year, Stewart's able to carve out a role, because he does, if he's able to space the floor, he does things that Wiseman and Bagley don't do, and that's be able to shoot and not be a total black hole on defense. And I think he'll be able to carve out a role that by the end of the year, assuming one of these bigs is moved, which we've kind of been talking about all offseason, that you just have a complete log jam. And clearly Isaiah Stewart's not the one being moved. So it's one of Wiseman or Bagley. I feel like by the end of the year, they're going to have to tinker with the lineup enough, and they're going to need to find shooting somewhere. And if Stewart can provide that, not going to be in the same capacity as Bogdanovich, probably.
I completely agree with what you're saying. Like, your analysis is correct of the roster. The issue is, though, if you are by the end of the year saying Isaiah Stewart can't be our starting four, he needs to be our backup five, then that means that Troy Weaver has made a gigantic error in extending the guy that you can't trust to be your starting power forward, even though you extended him so he'd be your starting power forward. You've made a mistake. You've made a big error. And that is, you know, that is an indictment of Troy Weaver. So Stewart, in my opinion, has to work at the four. He must, in order to justify that extension for the front office. Whereas I completely agree with everything you're saying, like, but he has to be your starting four this year. There's nothing else I think you can really do about it, meaning that. And again, like I said, with Wiseman too, like, he has to be getting your backup center minutes this year. I just don't think there's any way around it, at least for, you know, while you're trying to play meaningful games. Troy Weaver has said the goal for this year is to play 82 meaningful games. Well, if that's the case, how do you do that? And also, you know, make the moves that you've done in terms of, you know, paying James Wiseman over $10 million to be your backup center and paying Isaiah Stewart $15 million a year over the next four years. How do you justify that? And also say, oh, we're putting out the best roster we can. Like, it's, they're in a very, very difficult position right now. I really think they are. And I don't want to get bogged down with, like, the starting lineup stuff too much, but yeah, I just think that Stewart has to be your starting four. I think Wiseman has to be your starting five as the GM, because otherwise you have Tom Goris looking at you and saying, well, then why did we make these moves?
Yeah, I think grand scope at the end of the day, the problem is the Pistons are in a bad situation that is self-inflicted because of the roster construction decisions that have been made. And it goes beyond just having to decide between which one of these not good backup centers are you going to play. It comes down to your starting lineup is either going to be severely deficient defensively, or they're going to be undersized, lack shooting. If the Pistons start Asar Thompson and Bojan Bogdanovic alongside Jalen Duren, that's going to be a team or the starting five that may be a little bit better defensively because of Asar Thompson, but are going to have even more shooting concerns, because now instead of Stewart, who can maybe shoot a little bit, even though it's unproven, Asar Thompson clearly is not capable of spacing the floor right now at the NBA level, and Jalen Duren cannot do so, and we have not really seen if Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey can do so efficiently together. So this spacing becomes a concern. Well, then if you start Stewart and you start Bogdanovich, well, then your backup unit doesn't really have a true four off the bench. It has Asar Thompson, who we've talked about maybe playing some guard along with the three. Now you're pretty much telling him he's going to have to size up and defend the other team's fours and play the four role on offense. And maybe that would actually work for him because he's playing more at the rim and can do some more rim diving, things like that. However, Monty Williams wants to use him in the offense. But no matter what combination, no matter what five-man group, no matter who between Stewart, Bogdanovich, and Asar Thompson starts, whatever combination there is going to have at least one significant flaw and two to three other major questions surrounding the entire lineup configuration that it becomes very hard to envision not only that starting five working out, but there being the right combination then off the bench of different guys to mix in. And that's more of a problem, a bigger issue than, well, are you going to play Marvin Bagley for 18 minutes a night, or are you going to play James Wiseman for 18 minutes a night?
I mean, it comes down to this. We're talking about a career 32% shooter in Isaiah Stewart needing to be in the starting lineup at power forward, a position that he is not good at defensively, no matter what people on Twitter want to tell you. They had a net rating of, they had a defensive rating of what, negative 124 when he was on the court as a power forward last year. You're talking about Isaiah Stewart, who shot 32% from three for his entire career, as needing to be in that starting lineup for spacing reasons. If that doesn't tell you how untenable this situation appears to be, at least at the beginning of the season, because again, we don't know what Asar Thompson's going to look like. We don't know what Isaiah Stewart's going to look like. We don't know what kind of leap we're getting from Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, and Cade Cunningham. But the fact that we have to talk about it like that is very, very concerning. And yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at right now. Like, boy, Isaiah Stewart has to be in the starting lineup for shooting, for spacing reasons.
So there were just about a thousand possessions last year with Isaiah Stewart playing the four. Those lineups had a differential of minus 12.5.
Cool. Let's sign him to $60 million.
Fifth percentile. Not great.
Well, don't worry, Mike, because yeah. Monty Williams also came out and said that Jalen Duren needs to be able to play the four defensively as well, which I mean, come on. And offensively, he clarified it. He said offensively and defensively, Jalen Duren needs to be able to play the four. That to me is like, no, actually he doesn't. Like, I get it. He has to be able to defend on the perimeter. It's a five-man game, and like that's the reality of the of the league that, you know, they play in. But like, if we're talking about Jalen Duren playing minutes at the four, no.
Yeah, okay. Tom,
can we move on?
Tom Boris might have to moneyball this and just start trading guys away so that they can't possibly be played, kind of like how when Carlos Peña was traded from the Athletics so that he just would not play. Yeah, the double big lineup is another conversation we're going to end up having several times over throughout the season.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money
at Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to previewing the Atlantic Division, which we said before the pod was the most boring division in the Eastern Conference, probably just based on the teams here and the lack of anything that they did. They did a lot of almost making moves, but they never actually went through with anything that was super significant. Other than maybe the first team that we're talking about, and that's the Boston Celtics. Boston 57-25 last year. They lost to the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. No doubt a very successful playoff team the last several seasons. They did sign Jaylen Brown to a 5-year, $303 million contract extension, which is the richest in the history of the league. They were the only team, I think, to really make some, you know, balls to the wall move, because they recognized, yeah, we can't keep running it back with our treasure trove of assets and just expect things to be different. And I actually applaud them for that. They traded away Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon, and Grant Williams left for the Dallas Mavericks. They brought in Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. They also drafted Jordan Walsh, and they brought in former Detroit Pistons Fee Mikhailiuk. They have the second best odds right now per bet online to win the NBA championship. Second best behind those Milwaukee Bucks, who made the bigger move. But nonetheless, Boston made some moves that I think are really interesting. Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis are coming off of, well, Porzingis at least is coming off arguably his best season as a pro, and Drew Holiday has been a very good guard. He's a world champion. Fits a need for Boston. You know, he slots into that Marcus Smart role, but he's a much better defender to me than Marcus Smart and has more of an offensive game. And Porzingis gives them another big that can do some big stuff. He was a pretty good rim protector. He's always kind of played smaller than his height, but gives them another big. I do have some questions about their depth behind. I feel like they will inevitably somehow end up with Daniel Tice come like April or something. For like the upteenth time, they're going to find a way to get him back on the roster. But 57-25, did not rest on their laurels, did not do what the Miami Heat did and just said, yeah, you know, we made the finals, big whoop, we don't have to make any moves. No, no. Boston recognized some shortcomings, recognized they can't go back and do the exact same thing again and hope that it's different. They went out and made some really, really big moves.
Yeah, I mean, and look, this is a team that rightfully, in my opinion, it's funny because we talked about it a couple weeks ago when we broke down the Northeast Division. We talked about the Denver Nuggets, where we said, I'm not so sure that, you know, the Celtics necessarily should be in that same conversation. There's still a lot of questions there. acquiring Drew Holiday to me changes a lot of that. That is a player that they absolutely needed. I think he represents an offensive upgrade over Marcus Smart. I do agree with you. I think he is in the end, a probably better team defender than Marcus Smart is at the end of the day. And when you lose Marcus Smart too, you lose a guy who's a heart and soul kind of guy. The type of player that is a vocal locker room leader. Drew Holiday is not so much of the fire, you know, get everybody going at halftime kind of speech fella, but he's absolutely a player that leads by example. And it's not a surprise that when they acquired him, the Milwaukee Bucks won a championship. He's that kind of guy. He is steady. He is extremely dependable. And unlike Marcus Smart, you don't really have to worry about him in a tie game in the middle of a playoff run, pulling up and calling his own number and saying, hey, I'm going to be the hero tonight. That's not really his game. He struggled with turnovers a little bit last year, but I think in this system where he has more playmakers around him, I think Jason Tatum, I also think Derek White is a player that you can't ignore the impact that he has on this roster. And even Kristaps Porzingis, like being able to call his own number a little bit sometimes, I do really think that that is going to help the flow of Boston's offense a little bit. I just think they're a more dangerous team now than they were last year. And really, like Brogdon was okay, but trust me, man, like ask Boston Celtics fans about how they feel about him. He was not exactly a fan favorite. There's definitely issues with depth, true. But as we've kind of broken down, that's basically the deal with every single team right now, maybe outside of the Nuggets and maybe outside of the Bucks, but even that is debatable. So I think when you look at this team, they increased their top-end talent. Yes, they lost depth. I think losing both of the Williamses was not great. Al Horford is another year older. They are probably going to take a step back in terms of their interior defense. But I think when you have somebody like Drew Holiday and you have somebody like Jaylen Brown, I mean, shoot, signed to the richest deal in NBA history. Imagine how much more money he could have signed for if he could dribble with his right hand. You know, I think when you have those kind of guys on your roster who are able to provide that kind of defense on the perimeter and take away from penetration, I think that you can make up for maybe losing a really good rim protector in Rob Williams. And look, Porzingis is also more than capable of playing decent defense. He was really good last year. I don't think a lot of people realized how well he played for the Wizards. He was excellent, like really, really good for them last season. There is obviously always going to be the issue of health with him. That's not going to go away, but they did a good job of changing up the roster in a way that I think, well, yes, obviously has some potential downside, also increases their upside, especially on the offensive end of things. And you know what? Shoot, I'll also give him a little credit. I really liked Jordan Walsh. That was the player I would have preferred for the Pistons over Marcus Sasser. But yeah, that was to me a really heady play as well. He's a guy that can come in and really play a high level of defense, I think, during this season. I think he's really going to increase his contributions there by the end of the year and likely be a playoff performer for them. So yeah, this is a team that took a lot of risks this offseason, but I think they put themselves in a better position to win the title. And look, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but you cannot fault them for trying. So I'm a fan of what Boston did this offseason, and I'm a lot higher on them than I was even a couple weeks ago.
In my mind, and what I would assume was the prerogative from the front office, was it's kind of like now or never. Not in sense of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are both super young and still have their primes, but they've been at this now for years. And this is a team that's been in three of the last four Eastern Conference Finals. They've lost in the NBA Finals. They need to get their championship. And the moves they made this offseason were designed to do just that. Jasper, you made an excellent point in that a lot of the top teams in the league are top heavy at this point because They've committed the salary to the two, three, four best players on their roster, and they're essentially filling out the rest of the roster with what other exceptions and veteran minimums and draft picks they have at their disposal. And I think you could make the case that Boston has the best, you know, is the best six deep team in the league. I mean, they have two all NBA guys. Kristaps Porzingis was absolutely excellent last year. He completely fell under the radar in Washington for what he did defensively, for the growth he showed outside as a shooter. I mean, it was an incredible season for him that unfortunately was just kind of disregarded because he was in Washington and they were awful. But he was their best player last year, and he is not a minor upgrade over Robert Williams. He is a major one. The unfortunate reality with him is there's the health concerns. But if you were watching over the last few years, Robert Williams and Al Horford are always banged up and missing time themselves. So you're taking a swing on a higher level talent. And I was very, very excited about what Boston did when they traded for Kristaps Porzingis. I'm even higher on them now that they got Drew Holiday. And it's the worst case scenario for the Milwaukee Bucks, right? Like, you traded Drew Holiday to get Damian Lillard. You went all in, you made that upgrade only for Holiday to get rerouted to your biggest threat in the conference and a guy that has previous success defending against Damian Lillard, who also knows a lot of the ins and outs of the Milwaukee Bucks. So you added two very good players, two of those guys that they're not all-stars, but they're like in that tier right below all-stars, and they're, you know, very good players in that regard. Yes, they have some depth concerns, but if they can get some other guys like Jordan Walsh, like Peyton Pritchard, to give them some decent minutes with their top six, you know, this is a team that maybe makes a move at some point at the buyout or at the trade deadline to add an extra depth big. You know, maybe they don't love Luke Kornet, but this is a really, really good Boston team. I think the Drew Holiday trade obviously solidified their chances to compete in the East and compete for an NBA championship. But yeah, they pushed the chips in. It's tough to see some of the guys that were a part of this foundation go elsewhere. Like, losing Marcus Smart and Robert Williams certainly hurts them. They were a big part of the you know, underdog Celtics that, you know, were young with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and were competitive. And they've been there throughout their rise to one of the top teams in the league. But it was necessary for Boston to make some major changes after another year of falling short. And I'm not sure they could have done a better job with what was available this summer than what they ended up doing. So a really good offseason for Boston, and very excited to see what they look like. I think that they are deservedly so a top team in the East. And I know Milwaukee jumped to having the best odds to win the conference and to win the championship after the Damian Lillard trade. I think Boston, after what they've done, deserves to be right there with them.
Yeah, Aaron, I think that's a great point you brought up in terms of Drew versus Dame Lillard, because maybe on paper, the Milwaukee Bucks have a higher, you know, star power. But look, if you're Boston and you're matching up with Milwaukee in the playoffs, who is the guy that you would want on your roster to face off against Damian Lillard? Is there any other guard in the league that you would pick over Drew Holiday right now? I don't know if there is, really. So if you're talking about it like move, counter move, man, it was a perfect counter move to what Milwaukee did. Because while Milwaukee might match up better with some other teams, I think when you're looking at, hey, if we're in the Eastern Conference Finals and it's Milwaukee versus Boston, I think Boston has absolutely, like you said, put themselves in the best position possible to face up against Milwaukee with the roster that they have put together here. Especially when you're talking about guarding Damian Lillard and then also guarding Giannis. You know, man, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps Porzingis, Al Horford to a certain extent still, and Jason Tatum, if you're going to try and slow down Giannis Antetokounmpo, those are four guys you feel really good about throwing at him. and you don't feel as worried about Damian Lillard because, I mean, you know he's going to go off, but like Drew Holiday's going to make it hard on him, and that's all you can ask from your defenders. So especially losing Marcus Smart and replacing him with somebody like Drew, you're completely right. It was a great, great counter move to what Milwaukee.
Boston, you know, it's kind of annoying how good of a fit Drew Holiday is with the Boston Celtics. And, you know, credit to Brad Stevens. He's done a pretty good job moving on up as GM. These are aggressive moves that I don't know. I mean, it's very clear that Danny Ainge probably wasn't going to do something super aggressive like that. He went for Kyrie Irving and it kind of backfired. But these are aggressive moves. And, you know, they got rid of some core locker room guys. They got rid of some guys like Aaron said, been here since the beginning. But these are moves you have to make. You know, you have to look at your roster and think, can we run it back? And it was pretty clear that the answer was no. Just like the Milwaukee Bucks, it's pretty clear that the answer was no. You cannot run this back with Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton and just kind of assume that everything is going to be different this time around. You have to try to push forward. And they pushed their chips in, and Boston pushed theirs in as well. I mean, I feel like we're headed towards an awesome competitive round in the Eastern Conference playoffs between these two teams. I mean, that would be must-watch television to me. A team that is not really must-watch television right now, unless you like trains careening off of a canyon. I guess maybe less so, because Woj really, really went off the deep end and said that James Harden's going to go and cause a complete ruckus at Sixers camp, and he ended up doing none of that. But the Philadelphia 76ers, who ended up losing to those Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference semifinals, really weird team. Really weird offseason. They went 54-28 last year. By far the biggest storyline is that James Harden has not been traded, despite being on the block and requesting that he was put on the block.
Mike, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but really quickly, we do have something that just came out today from Sam Amick, where in regards to James Harden, where there have been sources saying that the Clippers were offering an unprotected first round pick and a pick swap for James Harden, whereas the Sixers want multiple firsts and Terrence Mann as well. So I just wanted to throw that in there in regards to what we're about to talk about.
Okay, good to know. I did not see that, but Daryl Morey was always going to try to get whatever he can. I remember him asking for like Evan Mobley and a pick and Jared Allen for Tobias Harris. So he is going to just ask for whatever the hell he wants. But James Harden is still on the roster after saying he would never play for Daryl Morey again and that he's a liar and all this other just insane stuff that came out of China at like 4 o'clock in the morning. But they're a super odd team, just because of the storylines that surround them. And then Joel Embiid, right after Drew Holiday was traded to another Eastern Conference rival, basically said that, hey, I'm having a great time over here watching everybody else get better and us get nothing. Not that Kelly Oubre is nothing, but he signed for less than $3 million a year. They signed Danny Green. They signed Montrezl Harrell, who immediately tore his ACL. They have Mo Bamba. They have Patrick Beverley, who was pretty good with Chicago last year. I'm actually surprised that the Bulls didn't make more of an effort to keep him. And they didn't have a draft pick, as they forfeited it due to tampering violations from, I think, DeAnthony Melton or P.J. Tucker from last year.
I believe it was tampering. It was P.J. Tucker and also James Harden. And also, I think it also might have been Montrezl Harrell as well. They got dinged for all three.
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of get it for Harden. I don't get it for P.J. Tucker or Montrezl Harrell either. But anyway, so they didn't have a pick. They lost Shake Milton. They lost Jalen McDaniels. It's just impossible to evaluate this team not knowing the status of James Harden. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Because they were a good team with him last year. He played really well last year. Their best lineup last year. Their best high volume lineup last year, which was a plus 13.1 differential, was Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, PJ Tucker, and Joel Embiid. Plus 13.1 out of 715 possessions. And they had some other lineups that were just as good. You know, if you added Melton and you moved Maxey over to point guard, they were plus 17.2. They had a lot of lineups without Maxey as he dealt with an injury, but clearly this was a good team last year. Maybe they're cursed. They just can't get past Boston. They just can't advance past that second round. I don't know what it is, but it's impossible to evaluate this team not knowing if James Harden is on the roster or if he's going to be on the roster. What is he going to look like? I was listening to another podcast that said he did not appear at practice at Colorado State in a fat suit. Breaking news, James Harden has not pulled out the fat suit to try to get himself traded like he did previously. Jasper, this is just a super bizarre team, and like many others that are doing all these previews, it's impossible to know what they're going to look like until we figure out the status of James Harden.
Yeah, you know when like when you go to like a fair or whatever, and they have those big sumo suits that you can like belly bump people with. That's what I'm imagining James Harden showing up to practice wearing. Just one of those.
Yeah, same.
Just boinging around in the post. I love that. Yeah, this is a team that, look, they're kind of, I think, in the situation like Boston was last year, where it's just like, I just don't think it's going to work. And it's, look, like you said, like when they have their five best guys together and healthy, they're great. But that has been the case for a while now. There's something that is not clicking with this roster, and they need to make, I think, a really significant move. And I don't mean just like, you know, moving, you know, getting James Harden. I think they need to really like blow up the soul of this team. I know that sounds a little dramatic, but I really think that's where they're at. And look, whether Joel Embiid is the guy that they need to retool around or maybe move on from as well, I think that's kind of a decision they're going to have to come to this year. The Clippers deal, if it happens, I just don't really know what else they have available to them at this point when it comes to Harden. And the same thing goes for Tobias Harris. Like, you know, if you're asking for Evan Mobley, like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like, what are we really doing here? I don't really understand. Exactly. And look, obviously, James Harden coming out and saying, you know, Daryl Morey's a liar and this and that is just ridiculous and dramatic and over the top. It's great also. We love it. I know you love your slop. You're slop addicted, Mike. We know it. You have a problem and we're enabling you.
That is some slop I was not expecting. Basically go up and say, yeah, he's a liar. Also, I hate him. And he smells.
An international
from a different country.
International slop for Mike. But like, yeah, it just like, how do you work around that? And now you're seeing all these reports and everybody's walking on eggshells. And really the only reason James Harden would play for this team is for the same reason why like he saw with Ben Simmons, where Ben Simmons lost like $20 million holding out. I don't think Harden's going to do something like that. We know that man wants to get his paycheck. So I just, from what I'm seeing them like bringing in versus what they lost, even Kelly Oubre, Danny Green, Mo Bamba, Pat Bev, like, I don't see these guys making any sort of a meaningful difference, especially when the guys you're replacing are Shake Milton. Shake Milton's a really good defender, and he was a good backup point guard. Jalen McDaniels, they traded for him. I like Jalen McDaniels a lot. I still think he's a good player, not as good as his brother, but still a good player. And those two guys, to me, would have been better additions to this roster than any of the guys they brought in this offseason. You know, Kelly Oubre to me is sort of a divisive figure, but that's kind of where I'm at with them. I just don't see how any of this is tenable. And that even includes after they move off from James Harden, because they can't keep him on this. Like, they just can't. They can't do that. It's just not going to work. So even then, after they trade him, I have a hard time really seeing how, like I said, like even if they do get Terrence Mann, how are a couple of firsts in Terrence Mann changing the outlook of where you're at. I just think that they're going to run it back this year because they have Joel Embiid in his prime, and he won the MVP last year. They have Tyrese Maxey, who is a really, really good young guard. But other than that, I don't see the upside here. I don't see where this fire in their belly to win the championship is going to come from. There's just too much bad juju around this whole situation. And until they get off of that, I don't see it changing. So, yeah, I still think they're probably going to be like a 50-win team. They're still going to go into the playoffs. They're still going to be good. And I have absolutely no faith in them to do anything of any meaning. It's just the vibes are rotten. Aaron, I don't know if you see maybe another way out of this for them, but I'm at the point truly where I'm not even 100% certain that keeping Joel Embiid is going to be their best path forward. Not maybe this year. I'm not saying trade him right now, but in like a year, maybe two, I just have a hard time seeing this be tenable.
No, I think you guys did a really good job talking here about Philly. I'll keep what I have to say short. The Sixers need to gauge Joel Embiid's interest on tanking this year. And they need to gauge his interest on, would he stick around through a little bit of a soft rebuild, a soft reset? They have to move on from James Harden. It's obvious that even though Daryl Morey doesn't want to give in to his commands, it's not going to work. And at some point, Harden's going to have to be off this team. I think what I would do if I was Philadelphia is I would be targeting draft picks. I would be targeting young, high upside players in trading James Harden. I have Tyrese Maxey, and I'd like to have Joel Embiid. I wouldn't want to trade away the MVP unless I went to him and I said, look, this situation's unfortunate. We were relying on James Harden to be here, to be an MVP caliber player alongside you to help us get to where we wanted to be. He's unfortunately chosen a different path. We have to make a decision. It's not feasible. It's not going to be possible for us to put together a winning team this year. We still want to build around you. We still want you and Tyrese to be the foundation of what we're doing. But we need to inject this team with some youth. We need to restock our assets, and we need to trade some pieces. We need to not only trade James Harden, but when possible, we need to trade Patrick Beverley. We need to trade Kelly Oubre. We need to trade Tobias Harris. We really need to pretty much reset this entire thing outside of you and Tyrese Maxey. And if you're in for that, we want you. You're the MVP. You're our guy. You're our franchise. If not, we respect that, and we'll try to make something work where we get you where you want to be, as long as we're getting back stuff that's going to help us accomplish what we need to accomplish, which is a bit of a reset. And it's unfortunate, but that's the reality for Philadelphia at this point. It hasn't worked, and it's not going to work. James Harden is the absolute worst. I can't stand him. I think it's really, really sucks that he does this everywhere he goes, kind of like Kyrie Irving. I had almost flipped my opinion on Harden last year in the playoffs when he had a couple of those just absolutely incredible performances. But for him to, a week after the season, come out and demand a trade reminded me why I despised him in the first place. That's where Philadelphia is at. It sucks. It's unfortunate. That's where it is. That's my thoughts.
Over under 49.5 wins, because that's what BetOnline currently has them at.
If James Harden's not playing under, I mean, if James Harden's not playing and Daryl Morey's going to drag this out for a few months, I'm going to say under. This league's too competitive for them to win 50 games this year, just sitting $60 million worth of cap space on their bench.
Yeah, the 13th best team in the East last year won 34 games, man. Like, this is not, maybe the top end is not the same as it is in the West, but the middle of this conference is a dog. So, yeah, I'm with you, I think, Aaron. I'd be taking the under even if James Harden's playing, because you know he's not going to be happy. So, you know that locker room's going to be absolutely cursed. I think I'd have to go with the under unless they are somehow able to get another star back. But yeah, oof, boy.
It's tough. And one of those teams that is going to be chasing the Sixers in this division is another playoff-bound team that advanced to the same round that Philadelphia did, and that was the New York Knicks, who went 47-35. They ended up losing to the eventual conference champion Heat. They are really just running it straight back. They brought in Dante DiVincenzo, Dwayne Washington, Isaiah Roby. They got rid of Obi Toppin, sent him to Indiana. This is a team that I guess they re-signed Josh Hart as well, who was important down the stretch. But this is another team, another Tom Thibodeau team of guys that are going to grind out every single game. They're going to be whittled down to their bones because he does not like to rest any key guys. But they're a tough team, and they showed that the first round of the playoffs. They advanced past Cleveland when a lot of people thought that the Cavs were a superior team, but they dug them directly into the ground and they advanced. But they really did nothing this past offseason other than moving on from Toppin and getting another player from Villanova to pair with their other two main players from Villanova. So, guys, the New York Knicks, any thoughts on the Knicks? I mean, I think they're going to be, once again, every single night, a very tough out, no matter what, because this is, like I said, a Tom Thibodeau team that just plays hard, and that's kind of their identity, is to just be a tough team to play against. You don't want to meet them in the first round. You don't want to meet them on a second game of a back-to-back.
Look, I like that the Knicks brought everyone back. They're kind of biding their time until they can get a big-name player via trade or free agency, as it seems to always be the case with New York. But for them to bring this team back after last year, third in the division, fifth in the conference, made it to the conference semifinals, it's something to build on. And Jalen Brunson was dynamic last year. Julius Randle had a very strong bounce back season. They have some decent complementary pieces. I think the biggest question mark is RJ Barrett. Is he capable of being that all-star level wing that I think the hope was when they drafted him? I don't know if that's the case, but they did bring in Dante DiVincenzo, who's going to give them good minutes. I think Quentin Grimes can take another step forward. He is a very intriguing two-way wing as well. Again, I think they're in a position to just kind of tread water until they can maybe take a swing on a big name. But I also like the roster that they have. Not that they're going to win a championship, but when you bring back essentially everyone, you're coached by Tom Thibodeau, you have two all-star level players and good role players around you, I don't think this is a team that's going to take a step back. You know, I think they can win 50 games this year. You're bringing back good players and under a good coach. There's a foundation there to what you built on last year. There's an understanding of what you need to do better. And I'm just buying into the continuity with this team. I am optimistic on New York again. I don't think they're coming out of the East. I think they're a long shot to come out of the East, but, you know, maybe more so than, you know, I think they have as much of a right outside of anyone other than Milwaukee and Boston. You know, I think they're right up there with Cleveland or anyone else that comes out of the conference. I like what the Knicks did in terms of keeping everything open to make that eventual big move, bringing back the roster, bringing back the core, and then bringing in a guy like Dante DiVincenzo, who I do think it is going to help them this year on the wing when they're looking for a little bit more consistency, something maybe RJ Barrett struggles with throughout the year. It seems like every season, but I like New York and I'm fine with them running it back. They had a good season last year. Let's see if they can improve a little bit on it this year.
So they're over under. Oh,
no, Mike.
I'm sorry, Jack. Just one more question. And I will lead right into you. Their over under is 44.5. Aaron, are you going to take the over or the under?
I would take the over on that. Yes.
I also would take the over for what it's worth, for a lot of the reasons Aaron laid out here. And yeah, Dante DiVincenzo, I think for me, is definitely an upgrade over Evan Fournier, who is now pretty much officially out of the rotation in New York. He's not happy about it, but it is what it is. Look, Tom Thibodeau is addicted to smoking on that mids pack. Like, you pass him some gas at a party, and he's like opening it up and adding some sticks and seeds to that thing. He loves smoking on mids. Like, that's his thing. And I can respect him for that. The thing is with them, yeah, you're right, Aaron. Like, I do like the continuity. I think Jalen Brunson was awesome. He really proved us wrong last year, 100%, because we were not big fans of Detroit potentially bringing him in, which, to be fair, was the right call. You know, now that you have Jaden Ivey, God forbid you also added Jalen Brunson to that mix. But they have good pieces there. Jalen Brunson was awesome last year, and they are in a position where they can bide their time. Yes. The fact is, if Julius Randle is your leading scorer, there is a hard ceiling. There's a hard cap on your ceiling. That's just what it is. But they have not overcommitted to anybody. They have not, you know, pushed their chips all in too far, and now they can't get it out. They're still really flexible, and they have enough talent to where they can make moves. We haven't talked about him. Quentin Grimes is an excellent, excellent defender. There's a reason he's playing 40 minutes a night for Tom Thibodeau at the end of the season. He's a really good young player. And while moving on from Obi Toppin was maybe hard for some fans, I think they have the pieces to replace him. And if RJ Barrett can take a step forward, if Emmanuel Quickly can take a step forward, if Josh Hart can be as good as he was last year, this is going to be a team that is excellent defensively, especially on the perimeter, and has the ability to where if another team is trying to blow things up, where they can move Julius Randle and potentially draft capital and maybe a young player, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein to me still has some value. Emmanuel Quickly has some value. They're not going to move Quentin Grimes because that's just not what Tom Thibodeau does.
But Mitchell Robinson,
yeah, right. Mitchell Robinson is still there as well. Like, there are enough pieces to where if something can open up for you, you are in a position to make a trade, and you don't have to move on from RJ Barrett, and you don't have to move on from Jalen Brunson, and you can put yourself into a position where if you're like, hey, we're a really good team. We both took the over, me and Aaron. We're a really good team, but we're a piece short, and we have that piece available. I think they can pull the trigger there. So while this is a team that didn't make a lot of moves, they're not very sexy. They definitely are not, like, blowing anybody's hair back when you look at that roster. They are sneakily in a really good position to elevate themselves in this division, especially when you look at the rest of it with the Nets and the mess that the Sixers are in. No, they can't win it, but could they finish second if things break right and they're able to make some smart moves? Yes.
Yeah,
I think absolutely. It's definitely on the table. So I like your perspective on that, Aaron, especially. Not a sexy team. Definitely not, you know, a championship contender, even if they do trade for a star. But they have put themselves into a position, I think, where in a year or two, they definitely could be looking at that. If they can just make some shrewd moves, move off of Randle in a way that really adds to their roster, they could be looking pretty solid. Maybe not this year, but moving forward. I think they have a really good opportunity to build, perhaps not a contender, but something close to it.
Definitely seems like they have the pieces to, like, just put together a package for the next star that is unhappy. I totally agree. But, you know, the next team that we're going to talk about also did that. It seemed like they had a plethora of assets at their disposal and then cashed those in for two guys that no longer play there. And that's the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets went 45-37 last year. I mean, another just arguably the weirdest season that they've ever had, having to trade Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and basically hit the reset button. This is another team that is kind of in figure it out mode. They have Cam Johnson. They have Mikal Bridges. They still have Ben Simmons on the bench. They lost Joe Harris in trading him to Detroit. They traded away Patty Mills. They lost Yuta Watanabe to the Suns. They lost Seth Curry in free agency. They're a team that is probably looking at hosting a play-in game. I feel like that's right around where they kind of reside. Like, they are they have good pieces. I love Mikal Bridges. I think he's awesome. Cam Johnson was a guy that, you know, a lot of Pistons Twitter wanted, and I think made a lot of sense, but they, you know, they kept him. They have some good defenders. Dorian Finney-Smith is, you know, a fine defender. Nick Claxton came out, was very vocal about the fact that everyone stopped paying attention to him after they traded Irving and Durant, but he should have been in the mix for, you know, all defense. And, you know, it's hard to argue against that. This is a team that is definitely in figure it out mode. They're, you know, their ceiling is not high this year, but, you know, they're a team that's like greater than the sum of their parts, because Bridges is really good and Cam Johnson is a nice complimentary piece. I'm not sold on Spencer Dinwiddie, and then maybe Ben Simmons plays better. I mean, I feel like we've been saying that for 2 years now, but he's a guy that everybody went nuts on Twitter because he made 10 free throws in a row. That's kind of where we're at with Ben Simmons.
We've entered the Andre Drummond zone, folks.
Yeah. but Aaron, this feels like a team that's definitely in, you know, see what you have mode, and, you know, maybe they offload Royce O'Neal. Maybe they offload Dorian Finney-Smith, or, you know, if Ben Simmons can show a sign of life and they can get some team to bite on him. Definitely seems like they could be sellers at the deadline trying to acquire some more assets, but they're definitely in figure it out, see what we have mode.
Agreed. And I'm not super, super high on Brooklyn. It feels like they were trending down by the end of the year last year, and they kind of backed into the playoffs a little bit. It seems like things started off hot after the Mikal Bridges trade, and then it died down. And they just didn't do a ton this offseason that makes me think that they got a lot better. I mean, they lost some depth pieces in Yuta Watanabe and Seth Curry. I know Joe Harris really didn't play a ton last year, and Patty Mills isn't a major loss, but I don't know. I'm not necessarily moved by them. I don't think they necessarily improved, and I think there are other teams in the East that got better or should develop. Like a team like Orlando is a team that I could see jumping over Brooklyn in the standings. I don't know. They just kind of – nothing they did move me. Like, I like Mikal Bridges. They re-signed Cam Johnson. It's a big contract. But after those two guys, who are the key contributors on this team? It sounds like Ben Simmons is going to be the starting point guard for them. I'll believe it when I see it, but what does that mean for Spencer Dinwiddie? Is he going to be on the move? They brought in Dennis Smith Jr. Like, that's another point guard on the roster. So, I don't know. They have a lot of guys. I don't think this is a playoff team personally. They could be in the play-in. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not super high on Brooklyn, and I'm sorry if that offends Nets fans.
Well, I think we're going to maybe disagree a little bit here, Aaron. To me, Brooklyn is by far the most interesting team in this division. They have the pieces here to, in my opinion, if everything breaks right, be a top five defense in this league. When you look at the guys like Cameron Johnson, good defender. Dennis Smith Jr., good defender. Ben Simmons, theoretically, great defender. Nick Claxton, great defender. Mikal Bridges, great defender. Royce O'Neal, really good defender. Spencer Dinwiddie can still play defense. This is to Dorian Finney-Smith as well, another really, really good defender. When I look at this team, I think not only do they go five deep defensively, I think they go like 10 deep defensively. And when you look at who they brought in and Noah Clowney, who is in many ways like a Nick Claxton clone, if you can be bringing him off the bench and having Nick Claxton starting, I think you have the potential to have outstanding rim protection, not just from him, but also with Ben Simmons. And I think that you have a wing defensive core that is maybe the best in the league right now, if you're just looking at it on paper. The guys that they have here, the issue is going to be offense. There's no question about it. You know, Cam Johnson's a great catch and shoot guy, but like, that is what he is. And he's a great cutter too, but that he's not a, you know, ball in his hands guy. Cam Thomas, really good scorer. I just have a hard time seeing him being more than a bench guy. Spencer Dinwiddie, like, same kind of deal. There's a limit there. And do we really need to get into Ben Simmons?
We don't.
I don't think we do. So when I look at this team, I think that they have the potential to be absolutely outstanding defensively. The key is going to come down to just what exactly is Mikal Bridges' offensive ceiling. Just what can you get from Ben Simmons on that end of the floor? Can you get enough scoring from Spencer Dinwiddie? Like, enough playmaking? That's going to be the problem. Is there enough playmaking? Because Mikal Bridges, we saw him score better, but he's still not a playmaker. I don't trust him there. And they don't really have those guys on their roster. So unless Ben Simmons is going to be Ben Simmons of 3-4 years ago, there is going to be serious issues there. That being said, with all these solid pieces, they have a lot of flexibility. They have a lot of draft picks. They have the potential here to, not this year, but next year, the year after that, put together some really intriguing trade packages like we said, the same kind of deal with New York. We're like, if somebody's got a disgruntled star, and it happens every single year, we know it's going to keep happening. They're in a position, I think, where they can not hurt themselves too badly. Like, they don't have to move off of Cam Johnson. They don't have to move off of Mikal Bridges. They don't have to do that. They can still get another really good player. So, shoot, I think of something like Atlanta. If Atlanta wanted to blow it up and trade Trae Young, hello, Brooklyn. Like, that to me is something that you could definitely make work, because you can make up for his lack of defense with an absolutely outstanding array of interior and perimeter defenders, especially on the wing. To me, this is a roster that this year, no, they're probably not a playoff team unless everything breaks right. However, I think they can absolutely set themselves up to next year be one of the most dangerous teams in the league. It's going to come down to what they can get from the young guys. They need to see what the ceiling is for some of these players. But if the ceiling is what they traded for, Aaron, I think that this could be a sneaky, really, really tough team to match up against this season.
I don't necessarily think they're going to be bad. Like, they are going to be good defensive. Like, you ran through it. They've got a ton of guys that can defend multiple positions, defend at the rim, defend on the perimeter, defend one-on-one. I don't disagree there. I just look, last year they were 15-16 after the Kevin Durant trade, swept by Philadelphia in the playoffs. I don't think this team has a ton of firepower offensively outside of, like, Mikal Bridges and Spencer Dinwiddie. If they start off slow, do they end up trading guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, like Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, like Royce O'Neal, and say, okay, we've got some young pieces and Bridges and Johnson. Let's open up some minutes for Cam Thomas. He's a guy that's shown he can, you know, help us offensively, but we've got a ton of guys on the roster that are seemingly going to get minutes over him. And we've just got, like, a lot of, like, good players, but when we put it all together, I don't know if it's coming out to a 45-50 win team.
Oh, no way. No, absolutely not. This is the definition of, like, a...
And they have a bunch of these guys that are good, but maybe it's not translating to wins because there's just not enough firepower across the board. Maybe that's when they say, okay, let's start moving off of some of these guys. Let's get some extra draft picks. Let's open up minutes for some younger players. You know, we drafted Derek Whitehead, like I mentioned, Cam Thomas. There's enough young guys on the roster that are going to want and need minutes that I just don't know if this is a good enough team to win. And because of that, I think they might end up trading off some of these guys.
No, so I agree with you.
I was just going to wrap up the Brooklyn Nets conversation with they're at 37.5 wins on BetOnline. Just real quick, what is your take on that, over or under?
To me, this is the definition of a let's see what we have season, which means probably you're messing around with lineups and stuff. You're trading guys, like Aaron said. Yeah. This is, to me, probably an under, but it's like a good under. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a bad thing.
You don't feel bad about it.
No, not at all. Like, you feel good. Like, you want to, it's okay. It's not a big deal. You just need to see what you have here. Like, you need to run in transition on offense because you don't have the half court, and you need to play great defense. And like that is going to make you tough to play, but it's not going to lead to a ton of wins. So I'm taking the under on that.
Yeah, I'd probably lean under. I think that's a great line because I think they could be at 36, 37. I think they could be at 40. So I think that's a great line right there. I'm kind of torn. I think if, you know, I had to make a decision, I'd probably lean under and it'd be just under.
I would probably take the under as well. I think they're a team that's ripe for moving on from some of these guys. I mean, they had offers for Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal last year. I know the Cavs were one of those teams that put in an offer for Donovan Mitchell's best buddy and Royce O'Neal. I think that you're going to get some offers for some of these guys before the deadline, and it would be smart of Brooklyn to, you know, sort of get as many assets as you can for some of these vets that you know are not going to be part of the long-term vision for this team. So I would take the under as well. Let's move on to the last team. That's the Toronto Raptors. 41-41. I mean, the definition of just even Steven. Missed the playoffs. They were reportedly involved in the Damian Lillard sweepstakes. They're a team that has been kind of like teetering on the edge of blow it up for quite a while. They have some very interesting roster. Well, really some contracts and really some lack of extended contracts in Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, that really make them another team that could completely change the playoff outlook for some team by moving on of one of or both of those players. Key offseason additions, they drafted Grady Dick. They signed Dennis Schroeder to replace Fred VanVleet. They also signed Jalen McDaniels and Garrett Temple. Again, they moved on from VanVleet. He signed a max contract with the Houston Rockets. They lost Will Barton. They lost Delano Banton. They're another team of let's see who's still here after the deadline, because Siakam, you're going to have to figure out if you're going to sign him long-term. Same thing with Anunoby. Both of those guys were brought up a lot in the Damian Lillard discussions. And obviously, well, supposedly, this is from a source that Masai Ujiri was getting a little bit greedy in those discussions with Portland, and
Masai ended up, no,
I know,
he would
insane,
never.
Insane, huh? And he,
that's so out of left field.
He kind of killed the potential of that deal, supposedly. So this is a team that is once again teetering on the brink of blow it up, and they lost Fred VanVleet for nothing. Maybe by design, just out of courtesy to him, not to send him somewhere where he doesn't want to go. But 41-41 last year, I don't think that they know the long-term vision for this roster. I don't know if Masai Ujiri knows quite what he wants to do. But keeping Siakam and keeping Anunoby seems very difficult. At least one of them is going to have to be moved, and you have to give an extension to the other. Their over-under is at 36.5 wins. Jasper, are you taking the over or the under?
36.5, boy. I think I'd have to take the under, and not because of the roster they have, but because of the roster I think they're going to have at the end of the season.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, Marvin Bagley, James Wiseman, Spider-Man meme. Like, that's Masai and Daryl Morey. Like, two guys that just right. are suffering from a crippling smartest guy in the room syndrome at all times. Hey, sometimes it works out. Don't get me wrong.
They are losing.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Masai won a title. I'll give him that. It did.
Sure.
That's why he's still there. If we're being completely honest, I don't think he would have kept his job if they hadn't won that title a few years ago. So this is a
team. I think RC Buford won the title.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right, no, actually, it's Kawhi Leonard's uncle that won them the title. But yeah, I think for me, this is a team that is definitely in a state of flux. It's hard to see them hitting 41 wins again, especially now that they lost Fred VanVleet and they didn't really replace him with anything. So
they almost
I don't
did.
Really... They almost did, but, you know, again, this is Masai saying, I'm not going to trade OG Anunoby for less than, like, 3 first-rounders. I won't trade him for Damian Lillard. Like, okay, King, go off. Yeah, they... This is just a very uninspiring roster. They have the exact same issues that they had last year in terms of their big rotation, which is to say they don't really have any bigs outside of Jakob Poeltl. And I like Jakob Poeltl, but I mean, that's really all you have. Like, I don't trust Chris Boucher. I don't trust Pascal Siakam as a post defender. Scotty Barnes, obviously, is still good. He looked last year like the guy that we all said shouldn't win the rookie of the year for those exact reasons, that he's not a star like that. He's not that guy. It's like Malcolm Brogdon winning rookie of the year. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he won rookie. I'm not going to say Michael Carter-Williams. That's mean. He's not Michael Carter-Williams. Let's be nice here. But yeah, there's just not the super high upside, and I don't really see anybody on this roster, you know, even with Grady Dick. Like, I like Grady Dick, but there's no star power there, and I just am having a hard time seeing where it's going to come from. Pascal Siakam, regardless of whether he's willing to sign an extension or not, should absolutely be on the trade market. Should be no question about that in my mind. I think the same thing goes for Gary Trent Jr. I think the same thing should be going for OG Anunoby. However, you know, that trade market seems to be pretty one-sided now. So for me, this is a team that they just got to blow it up. Like, you can't keep treading water like this. There's no reality in which you overperform and forget, make it like, may. There's just no reality where you overperform and even make the playoffs in the East this year. I just don't think it's possible, especially when the teams underneath you in Orlando and in Charlotte and in Detroit are also gunning on getting better. You are going the wrong way in this division and in this conference. Everything needs to be on the table. While I think it was silly that Masai wouldn't, you know, he's like, oh, I won't trade OG for Damian Lillard. I also just don't think they should have been involved in the Damian Lillard sweepstakes in the first place. It doesn't make any sense. They're just not in that position whatsoever. They are not a player away. They are a roster overhaul away. This is a team that just needs to move on from 2019. Congratulations. You won the title. It's time to get out of the pool now and dry yourself off and get back on that diving board before you jump in again. Because right now, your fingers are pruning, and you're kicking your legs, but you're starting to go underwater, fellas. So it's time to call it a day. Let's move on. Let's see what we can figure out here. Because look, if you keep OG, you keep Scottie Barnes, at least you have something there. Grady Dick, you have something that you can look at and say, okay, we have a couple things. Let's see what we can get for Pascal Siakam in terms of draft capital and just build up our first round picks, see what we can do in a couple years.
Aaron, are you taking the over or the under?
Yeah, I think this line is built in with trades happening at 36.5, and that tells me that Vegas knows this is not lasting in Toronto. Moves are coming down the pipeline. You know, they have a lot of guys they could move. I don't necessarily think OG Anunoby is as good as maybe he thinks he is and others feel he is. There's been always that talk about him wanting a bigger piece of the pie on offense and getting the all-star type of volume and things of that nature. And those opportunities have been there. I also look at his playoff performances where he seems to struggle to score and shoot. And I don't necessarily view him, you know, as some outstanding asset that others seem to think he is. I think he's a good player, but the way he's talked about, you know, I don't view him and Mikal Bridges on the same level. And I think their belief is that he's a Mikal Bridges type of guy with the type of first round picks he'd require to move, you know, 3-4 first round picks. That's what they were talking about for Bridges. That's what people talk about for Anunoby. And I'm just not there. You know, I like Pascal Siakam, but it just, I think Jasper, you know, you made the point that I liked from what you said the most was this is a team that just kind of needs to move on from 2019. This group won the title. And they haven't been able to replicate that success since, or anything really close to that. And I think that that's bothered that locker room. It's caused division. I don't think these guys necessarily seem to like each other. And now you're missing Fred VanVleet. I don't think he was hurting them. So I think there's just too much going on there. And they got worse this offseason in terms of their roster. So, yeah, I think some more trades are coming. This is a Toronto team that just needs to kind of reset. Ujiri needs to cash in on the perceived value, and maybe value that he has helped prop up to be worth more than what it truly is, in terms of what they're going to end up getting from Siakam and Anunoby. But they need to start tearing things down, and unless they just want to have another season like last year where they sit in the middle of nowhere with no true direction and a bunch of frustration amongst everyone involved.
I just can't believe that they were even talking about acquiring Damian Lillard. That to me is like insane. I forget what, you know, he like Masai turned down. The fact that they were even involved doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry. I like Pascal Siakam as much as the next guy. He's not the second best player on the title team. He's just not. Not when you look at the rosters and the teams that are truly in contention. Is he better than Kristaps Porzingis? No. No, he's not. And Kristaps is the third best player on that team. I just don't see what they're thinking when they're like trying to reload. You're not in reload mode. You are in rebuild mode right now, and you need to come to grips with that fact.
Interesting. Siakam or Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, last year definitely. That's tough. I am a
I mean, Siakam's a good player.
I'm unfortunately a Siakam fan.
I think
I like Siakam. I like him, but he's I'm sorry, he's not the second best player on a title team. He just isn't.
Who was the second best player on the Raptors title team?
That would be the man, the myth, the legend, the big booty warrior, Kyle Lowry, my friend.
Yeah, you're right.
And again, if Siakam's that third guy, that's amazing. You're looking good. But if he's that second guy, I don't see it. And it's like, you don't have the depth either. You know, if you could maybe get away with it, if Siakam's your second best player, like you look at like, I don't know, frickin' the Nuggets even, where like Jamal Murray's their second best player. But Jamal Murray's also an absolute killer in the playoffs. Pascal Siakam, he's a good player. I don't want to crap on Pascal Siakam, but like they don't have the depth to make up for not having that second guy. If you had a bunch of other amazing role players. Shoot, if you had the role players that frickin' Brooklyn has, you'd be looking maybe at a little different situation, but it just doesn't work. This roster does not work when I look at it. There's just too many holes. I have no faith in them fixing that with like a move or two. It's got to change. You got to.
No, I mean, I think we're all in agreement that they are a team that needs to be blowing it up. It's just I don't know if they're going to do that and build around Scottie Barnes. I don't necessarily know that they feel confident that Scottie Barnes is the next centerpiece of your next championship roster.
Even more so a reason to blow it up, because that means you need as many shots at it as you can get, which means you need to get picks. You need to get high picks. And that's why even I say 36.5, to be honest, if the line was 33.5, I'd probably take the under. Like that's where I think they have to be right now as an organization.
Oh, I agree. I think we all agree that they should definitely be in blow it up mode for sure. And I think we'd all take the under, because I think they're going to come to their senses at some point. I don't know what month it's going to be, but at some point to just say we can't continue on this path of just sitting in no man's land with players that we don't have signed long term, other than Jakob Poeltl.
But that's also not how Masai likes to do things. He's a reload kind of. I mean, he did it. You saw it in Denver when he traded away Carmelo Anthony. It wasn't for, you know, a bunch of pick. There was a lot of players involved. He tried to make a good team out of
that.
Losing that star. So it will be really interesting to see what they do in terms of the front office, but on the court, I do not think it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun to watch. This team, like we said, just has to figure out a way to blow it up and move on, get your assets and start the painful rebuild. You still have Scotty Barnes. I mean, that's at least it's something, and you're going to have Jakob Poeltl, but just the weird misshapen roster that it seems like the Raptors always have. They need to find a way to acquire something for Anunoby if you're not going to pay him. I think they really just need to determine if they're going to pay these guys. If you're going to pay Siakam, if you're going to pay Anunoby, pay one of them, trade the other, recoup some assets, and you know, see what happens. Teams have been able to flip a rebuild pretty quickly. Well, that's going to do it for the Atlantic Division. Guys, do you have any other thoughts before we close out a very long podcast?
No, I mean, look, preseason starts on Sunday for the Pistons against the Phoenix Suns. So we'll have some more Pistons content to talk about next week as we continue our divisional preview series. Only two more divisions remain, including the Central Division, the one I think everyone's probably most intrigued with if you're listening to this podcast. So good show as always, boys. I've really enjoyed these discussions about the different teams. I think it's fun to go across the league. It's not something that we always do on the show. So I think this has been fun, and I thought today was another good discussion.
It was like a two-hour podcast.
I know, but you know what? The thing is, I love these discussions as well. Sometimes when we just talk about the Pistons all the time, I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, I don't know anything about basketball. And then we talk about these, and I'm like, oh, no, wait. We do know a little something about basketball. We're actually able to give good takes on these teams. So that makes me happy, and I just love talking with you guys about it, too. You know what I mean?
People are going to see this hit their feed tomorrow morning and be like, what the hell is this? They're going to see a massive, like, 1 hour and 40-minute movie.
But I hope they're listening.
About the Toronto Raptors.
I hope they're listening, because I genuinely do think that these are, you know, especially for a lot of fans who only kind of watch their team, I think that these podcasts are a really good way for our listeners to kind of catch up on the rest of the league, see where people are at, and, you know, get a better idea also for when we do hit on the Pistons, where the Pistons stand in the Eastern Conference and in the NBA as a whole. So, yeah, I hope people are enjoying them, because I really am.
Yeah, I mean, it is long, but I do like to talk about other teams, because this, at least now in the East, it has more of an impact on the Pistons, and maybe you can make some connotations to some of that. We only have a couple of divisions left. We're almost done before we get to the Central and get to talk about the teams that the Pistons play the most. And we hope that you'll be joining us for that episode as well, and all of the ones after that. We didn't talk a whole lot about media day. We should probably find some time to talk about that too, as that's the big meaty Pistons news. And then, you know, the preseason is basically here. We had a game today. And we hope you'll be joining us for that as well. We're going to have more preview content coming for the upcoming NBA season, both in podcast form and on our website, palacepistons.com. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Palace Pistons podcast. I'd like to thank, of course, Jasper and Aaron for joining me on the show. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, BetOnline, where you could use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use BetOnline. Thank you all for joining us. See you all next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.